Hi, Robert hier. Dieser Podcast wird euch präsentiert von der Hannover Messe. Wir sagen vielen herzlichen Dank an die Kollegen in Hannover und jetzt geht's los. Robotik in der Industrie. Der Podcast mit Helmut Schmidt und Robert Weber. Hello everybody and welcome to a new episode of our Robotics Podcast. My name is Robert Weber and I would like to welcome our US correspondent Stu. Welcome back.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Stu, before we start, congratulations on your Engelberta Robotics Award. It's a great honor to have you with us.
Thank you very much. It was a great honor and a great evening that we had on Wednesday of this past week for the award ceremony.
But just between you and me, they recognize your lifetime achievement, but you are still into robotics, right?
Well, it's an award for leadership. So it's not only about leadership of companies and things that you've done within a business, but it's also in contribution to the industry. So beyond the leadership roles that I've been fortunate to have over the years, I've been a heavy contributor to the A3 and the American Society of Welding and other areas with the goal of trying to grow the overall pie related to robotics and get as many people interested in understanding and engaged in robotics as possible and not just fulfilling a job as a leader.
But you're still in the robotics world, right? So you won't leave now.
No, I definitely won't leave now. Frankly, I'm having too much fun for one thing, and I enjoy the challenges and I enjoy the work that we do and enjoy the people that I've met. And, you know, it's through this industry, I've met friends for life.
And, yeah, absolutely.
You know, at this stage, in addition to the work, I have the opportunity to do some paying forward to some people that are well-deserving that I hope we can help their career into their future as well, because we're going to need their help in the future. You know, we're talking about healthcare robots for the elderly, and none of us are getting any younger. So I'm hoping these people are truly successful in that particular scope of work, because we'll need their help when we get to be old and decrepit.
Exactly. So let's talk about the Automate a little bit. I have four questions. What did you see?
So the biggest thing that I think that I noticed that was different this year, and it's been, you know, evolving over recent years, is there is a significant increase in the total number of companies involved in vision, especially related to AI-enabled vision. There's probably at least 20 new companies on the floor at Automate that are fairly new within the last year or two. The other big change was the number of AMR companies. We have been seeing the AMR companies coming on for a while, but now that we're past COVID and shipping issues and everything else, this is the first year that a lot of the international companies have been able to come to Automate for a while. And there's a significant increase in the numbers and configurations of AMRs. And of course, humanoids are continuing to be a hot spot. So Agility Robotics was there with their unit and demonstrating it live, and many other humanoid companies are coming to market, still trying to find good use cases in some cases. But you can see the technology is evolving, and you can see that they're getting closer to being factory ready or industry ready. But I still believe it's a long time before we'll see them for home use and for use in close proximity to people.
Because of the energy capacity, of battery capacity, when it comes to costs, or what are the obstacles?
All of those, there's lots of obstacles. Also, you know, because of litigation risks, everybody holds robots to a higher standard than what they hold people. You know, case in point, I could accidentally step on your foot and, you know, cause no harm and you'd think nothing of it. It just happens. But if a robot were to do it, it'd be a catastrophe, right? And of course, robots could be heavier. There's other things that could happen. But, you know, what happens when a robot falls over? You know, when a person falls over, you tend not to get sued. But if a robot falls over and falls on granny or whatever, you know, it's a major issue. So the challenge is how do we evolve safety standards so that people remain safe, but it doesn't become ridiculously difficult for manufacturers to deal with things that happen normally in our life. And the same is true for AI. There's a lot of discussions around AI and how dangerous AI is. And my claim is that AI is no more dangerous than the screwdriver, and you can allow a 5-year-old to buy a screwdriver in a hardware store. So it's a matter of managing the outcomes and managing the perceptions. And right now, you know, most consumers out there still think of humanoids as being common in the industry because of what they've seen in science fiction movies and YouTube videos and whatever. But, you know, we're still in the early stages of evolution of humanoid-type robots.
What did you miss at Automate?
What did I miss? So the challenge is the show has gotten to be very big, and there were lots of innovations that were probably there, but difficult to discern from all the other, you know, noise and activity at the show. So one of the advantages I had, I happened to be a judge for the A3 Innovation Award at Automate, and we were able to go and visit the top 30 companies that submitted applications, and we narrowed it down to the top five, spent quite a bit of time with the top five, and of course, awarded.
What are the top fives?
So I don't remember all five of them off the top of my head, but the company that won was a company called Silk. And Silk is an interesting story in the sense that if you had not paid attention and really listened to them closely, you would have thought, oh, it's just another line scanner. Their technology is an eye-safe line laser scanner, but they've coupled it with technology that allows it to have a very big field of view at extremely high speed and be used for logistic applications as well as guidance and safety and all kinds of different things.
Is it a U.S. company?
It happens to be a U.S. company.
Okay.
They are in California, and their fab facility, they're a fabless silicon integrator, so their fab is in Japan, but their business is North America, and they're doing business globally. And what was interesting is they started off working for things for robots, certainly, but it winds up having tons of other applications, everything from identifying drones at long distances away, as well as where the drone's trajectory and speed and other things are, but they can even identify the drones by the propeller speeds and all kinds of other crazy things at extreme distances, but also it's very capable up close. So that was one of the award winners. There were other ones that were, you know, focused on processing technologies. We saw some fantastic blade servers with multiple NVIDIA processors.
But stay with what did you miss? We come to excitement later.
So, yeah. You know, other things we missed was that I missed, I think, the companies that were able to tie their technology to business cases. I don't think there was enough emphasis on the financial side on the business case. And then the other thing was there was a lot of distraction about discussions around tariffs because a lot of these companies are international trying to figure out, you know, how and what to do regarding the tariffs in the States. So that caused some distractions in discussions that took things off topic, because at the end of the day, it could be a cool technology, but if there's not a financial business case that's tangible and measurable, then it's not going to get deployed.
Okay. What excited you most? So you already mentioned the guys with their new sensor technology, right, from California, but what else?
I think what excites me most is the trend in the technologies of what I call convergence. So there's convergence between collaborative robots and traditional industrial robots in the sense that you can make industrial robots collaborative and collaborative robots industrial. And a lot of that—
Can you give us an example?
Well, yeah, certainly. I mean, if you look at any of the major cobot companies, well, you are as the example, significant amount of their business is because the robot has a great form factor and ease of use and other things that cause it to be good in traditional industrial applications. Companies like KUKA for a long time have had technologies to enable people to work within the envelope, within contact with robots for everything from robocoasters to medical applications to, you know, other types of things where you use speed and distance separation along with other types of controls. So I think the thing that's exciting most about this is I see a consolidation and combination of sensors that are enabling robots to be able to do more. No longer do robots have to be blind, and no longer do they not have to be able to feel. Those sensory perception capabilities are now there, enabling robots to not just have to be, you know, feelless type technologies that are more difficult to deploy. So ease of use is a big thing. There's a huge emphasis on AI.
So we will see the end of cobots because everything comes together now, and maybe in a few months, years, we only speak about robots and not about cobots anymore?
Not so much. So we will be talking more about our collaborative applications. We focused on what is a collaborative application and how do you accomplish that and what are the risk assessments. So there'll still be applications that are pure cobots, that they're the best form factor to do the job. But, you know, cobots and industrial robots and sensors and all these things, these are tools in your toolbox. The key is how do you apply the technology? And different applications will require different content. So it's important to have a very good knowledge of the toolbox and all the different tools that are available to use them in the most cost-effective manner for the best outcome.
Mm-hmm. And what else excited you?
I think the recognition by the industry or by customers that robots are much more than just factory devices. I think we're finally starting to hit the curve where we're being more generally accepted. And you see this evolution in robots of like the automotive. It used to be robots in automotive was unusual. Today it's commonplace. Robots in warehouses were unusual. Now it's commonplace and frankly a requirement in warehouses. And in more and more places, we're seeing robots being deployed in more use cases that are valuable to the point that, frankly, a lot of people don't realize that they're working with robots. They're just an automated device and don't think of them in terms of being robots. And that's when you get that high level of acceptance, the growth of the industry will accelerate.
And what disappointed you?
I think what disappointed me was the fact that there are still a lot of companies and people who have not taken it upon themselves to learn more about the industry, and they continue to be resistant to change. They're not adopting to it, and they don't realize that some of the ills that they have in their business today can be addressed with automation, not just factory automation, but even office automation.
Mm-hmm.
There's still a lot of resistance to change. There's still a lot of fear. There's a lot of people who think, oh, robots are, you know, for other companies. They're not for me. They're, you know, for the big guy, not for the little guys. So I think there's still a lot of work to do from all manufacturers and all industries to advocate for why robots and why now. And in fact, many of the kids that are out there are actually more integrated and aware of robots than their own parents, but the parents are the current decision makers.
Exactly. What about the hottest rumor? Because when you go to a trade fair show, there are always rumors in the halls. What was the hottest rumor?
Yeah, well, I won't fuel some of the rumors, but in general, there's lots of mergers and acquisitions going on. That's been something that's increased over time, but investors have realized that investing in robotic automation is a hot thing to do. There's a lot of companies that are running in stealth mode and they're kind of whispering what they're doing and trying to attract investors and trying to attract.
Can you give us an example what they are whispering?
Well, they're all whispering about, you know, creating an AI company and taking what they've learned from their past experiences of working with other major corporations and creating private companies to go pursue some of those applications. Like they'll learn from one large manufacturer what to do for a particular product, and then they'll go out and start a small company to go manufacture those kinds of things for other people. There's a lot of students that are graduating from university with the entrepreneurial spirit and want to do startups right out of the gate, perhaps without having some practical industry experience, which is possible, but risky. So there's lots of buzz, and there's lots of information, lots of things that are going on. The challenge is which ones are really raising money for the right reasons and are going to be useful and valuable, and which ones are just frankly generating cash for starting up and then will abandon the project and move on to something else or flip the company and move before there's any sustainable value from the company. And some investors are going to get burned, frankly, in some cases.
Sure. Which company or which startup should we have a look on?
I really can't say and shouldn't say. In many cases, I'm under confidentiality for some of them.
But what kind of topics? Is it physical AI building big AI robotics foundation models? Is it, I don't know, LLM technology combined with robotics? What do you think?
Yeah, it's literally across the board. It's AI-enabled software for helping companies make decisions faster regarding automation or faster regarding safety standard compliance. There's startups that are related to physical AI or decision-based AI for enabling robots to become more autonomous and decision-making. There's certainly mechanical startups of, you know, new robots.
That's interesting.
And controllers, yeah. and AMRs. I mean, there's AMRs exploding everywhere. People have figured out that they're easy to build, for one thing. There's some startups regarding battery technology for scaling batteries more appropriately for automation, because a lot of times we use batteries that are built for other things Now they're starting to understand that batteries for factory automation maybe have to have a longer use cycle in order to be more cost-effective. So it's literally every corner of the industry has a significant amount of innovation going on. And like anything else in the startup world, there'll be some that'll be successful. And I'll applaud them for starting early and focusing on what they're doing. But there'll be a lot of them that will struggle. But that's the nature of business. Same thing happened in the car company, computer companies, chip companies. That's the nature of the business.
What is your opinion? Because you mentioned mechanical startups. What is your opinion? Is there a room for innovation in the field of mechanics when it comes to robots? Is there still a room?
Yeah, I really believe there are because, you know, at the end of the day, you can only do so much with software and vision systems, these kinds of things. Eventually, you got to do something that has physics involved of doing stuff, actually physically moving things. And the question gets to be is what's the right form factor? And are there standard form factors out there, or does the form factor have to be, you know, constructed through custom automation? And yeah, there's always going to be room for not only mechanical related startups of product, but there's also going to be the analog of that, which is the integration side of the world. Because some of the integrators have created components that are interesting and useful and are out marketing those. And some component companies have created integrating companies that are highly capable, but now are integrating things above and beyond their own products. So you see a lot of niches and a lot of specialties. But the key is that all of them need to focus on what's required by the end customer to make the end customer work and be reliable and happy with their investment. And there's lots of ways of getting that done. So the key is to test early the use case with the customer to make sure it's useful and valuable and then start scaling.
Mm-hmm. What else did we miss at Automate? What do you want to share with our listeners?
So I think in general, maybe we missed the willingness or the engagement of government from the U.S. side. There's certainly a lot of government agencies that are working on business expansion, but we continue not to have a government policy regarding automation and robotics to help promote that within the United States. So we tend to be underdeployed with robots in the U.S. compared to other countries of which I've done business in. And we don't really have a policy regarding that. Likewise, the instability of the policy that we have on imports and exports is a huge part of the problem. So I think what's missing is, generally speaking, the politicians like talking about robots and talking about AI. It makes them sound smart and important, but I rarely see politicians rolling up their sleeves and really learning about the industry and what we do. So I see executives from companies learning about robots. I see, you know, people in general and students learning about robots. I don't see policy and decision makers in the politics world actually understanding or learning anything about it, yet they're very happy to legislate about it. And that's a frustration, frankly.
Because you mentioned politicians, that we don't want to get in politics, but there's a huge interest from the U.S. government now to promote robotics as a new field for the whole U.S. economy. Or am I wrong?
So there's not a policy per se. They've not done anything other than talking. They've not really about it. And in fact, they've created situations that makes it more difficult. You know, case in point, there are almost zero. I don't want to say zero. There's a few. Brooks Automation would be a good example. There are very few companies that actually manufacture robots in the U.S. anymore. Most of them are built internationally. There are companies that have very high U.S. content, and there are some companies that are, in fact, building here. But the ratio is mostly overseas. A lot of the content we need for automation is overseas. So a lot of the recent things they've done is actually slowed down the ability to invest and deploy in robotic automation to get factories and things turned on. The other thing is a lot of the policies that they currently have are very short term. It takes time to move factories or to build factories. Even if you have a great idea, you know, it could be 1 to 5 years before a domestic factory is created.
Exactly.
By the time you acquire land and investors and all the different things it takes to actually make that work.
But there is the vision, right? They have the vision to do that. And everybody should now, when they finish high school, they should apply for a robotics job. That was a little bit the idea, but I think it's too early to tell.
It's too early. And frankly, a robotics job is kind of funny because there's lots of different things you can do that get you involved in robots without
it. Exactly. Yeah.
So I think the STEM education and critical problem solving is still really important. I think the idea of how do you work as a team to have mechanical, electrical, software, business people, marketing people. I think the idea of how do you have a collaboration of people from different viewpoints working together with a focus on automation is very important. You know, they talk about elder care, but I don't see any support coming from the government or other people regarding how do you develop and deploy robotic automation for elder care. You know, they're too busy worrying about the drug companies or other things. So in my world, talk is cheap, action much louder than words. And the key for me is let's pick some battles that need to be solved and go work on those together as a coalition with the companies and the members of industry that are focused on getting those problems solved.
Exactly. Stu, it was a pleasure. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. It's great to talk to you again, and I wish you well.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Robotik in der Industrie. Der Podcast mit Helmut Schmidt und Robert Weber.